Our first speaker this morning is going to be Michael Murphy from our class, 87. Michael's going to be, his title of his talk is Doctor My Eyes. We're starting a little bit early, which is great. I just wanted to give you a little bit of information about Mike. He graduated from McGill in 87, went off and did residency in Quebec and New Zealand somehow, has met his wife, Jean Flanagan. They now live in Vernon, Columbia, British Columbia, and have three children. Mike is a family practitioner in Vernon, British Columbia, and has also been doing some medical missions where the emphasis has been eye care. And so his talk is going to be about his medical missions for the last 14, 15 years. Here we have Mike for the first talk this morning.
Good morning, bonjour tous. Thanks, Phil, for introducing me.
There you go.
Thank you. And that's my talk. Thank you very much.
Brilliant.
Was that in time? Okay, we have to go to the next, I don't know how to go to the next section.
You have to go here.
That's what I'm pressing. But. Perfect. As you saw from the first slide, I have no conflict of interest to declare. It's my pleasure to be here today for our 25th medical school reunion, CME Frontiers of Medicine. Thank you to all those involved with the organization of this reunion. It's wonderful to see everybody. I'm going to give a nice, easy talk, something on the line of Rick Steves' Travel Medicine. Sit back, relax. You don't have to worry about jet lag or being in a cramped airplane or anything like that. It's going to be a pictorial talk, Doctor My Eyes, and it's going to walk you through a typical two-week ophthalmological mission with a compilation of slides from 14 years of mission trips that I and my extended family have had the pleasure to be involved with through the organization MMI, or Medical Ministries International. Medical Ministries International is the group that I've gone with, and I was fortunate enough to be in our town of Vernon. We have a local ophthalmologist who was involved with this organization, and so we were able to piggyback through his involvement in this organization to go on these trips. And the great thing about it is it's been providing medical care for the world's poor since 1969, so it's very well organized when you go abroad to these developing countries. They provide volunteer projects as well as permanent centers throughout the world. And often the volunteer projects are 1 or 2 week missions. Their object is to establish permanent centers through liaising with local governments and using local manpower. So often they'll train physicians in the local area. They'll take them away. Their ophthalmological site is in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. They train them, and then they bring them back to the country of origin to set up permanent centers. The The flagship is the provision of ophthalmological care, but they do a lot of other trips, medical, dental, surgical. So there's a variety of options that you can use. You'll see that the volunteers from all walks of life, and they're working together to form an effective assembly line of stations providing in ophthalmological care. Before we begin this pictorial journey and seeing all the changes in Montreal and McGill, walking around, I'd like to tell you a story, a little bit of how I feel technology has revolutionized our lives over the last 25 years since we were last here. Today's iPads and iPods and iPhones really have revolutionized our lives. As Phil mentioned, I live in a small town in British Columbia. I'll excuse the quip about Columbia, you know, but it's a town of 50,000, and it's a town where, borrowing a phrase, everybody knows your name. One time I was in the supermarket shortly after coming back from one of my trips, and I was accosted by one of my patients in the supermarket, and by and large they're pretty good. They don't they respect your privacy, and he said, "Where were you over the last couple of weeks? I was trying to get in, but your receptionist said that you were away." And so I said, "Well, I was on an eye mission." And he looked rather perplexed. And I said, "No, not eye/mission, but E-Y-E mission." So he was able to understand what I had done. So we'll start our journey on the eye mission. And first of all, journey begins with preparation. Here's a picture of my wife and my brother-in-law with some of the equipment that accompanies you as you come down to the mission. They're on their way to Columbia. And you can see that we're very Canadian, so we like to use our hockey bags to transport the material. Sometimes some of the countries feel that hockey bags aren't luggage, so you get a little bit of leeway with regard to weight restrictions. But everything is brought down for the setup of the clinic, both the medical and surgical. You can see the big cylindrical tube there is from some of the microscopes that come down for the cataract surgery. Now we start setting up the clinics. We set up both the clinic and the operating room. And they're set up in a variety of different settings. This is a badminton court in a hospital in Indonesia, and it's the most pristine setting that you'll ever see. There are a variety of other settings we've been. Typically, there's schools. In Burma, we were involved in Buddhist monasteries that are less than ideal with regard to cleanliness. But this was just spectacular. And in setting up the clinics, really, it boils down to how many uses of duct tape can you think of? Here's setting up one of the operating rooms, and this is in Burma. We were able to use one of the local surgical suites to set up, and we have two surgical beds next to each other for doing the cataract surgery. The person in the background is my father, who is a chemical engineer technologist slash Mr. Fix-It. And so he was involved in setting up the program and making sure that the electrical current changes were not going to fry your instruments and things like that. Sometimes it happened, and then he would have to get dressed up, and I think he always wanted to be a doctor, and would come in during the surgery to fix some equipment. Once we set up the clinic, then we start to involve the process of registering. And this is a lineup in Burma of people waiting to register to come into the clinic. Often they've heard about us coming over the last couple of weeks through word of mouth or through different organizations that are there. And so they start coming. And some of them have come, you know, a couple of days of travel to get to the clinic. Then they're registered. And then once they're registered, they begin the process of walking through the different stations in our assembly line. So first of all, we check for visual acuity, and we check for both far and near vision. Here's my mom involved with helping out for far vision. And you can see the gentleman that she has the spoon over the eye is using his fingers to point in the direction of what's the illiterate E. So if you look down the hallway, this is what he's seeing, is that there are people holding the illiterate E, and it gives them a rough visual acuity. So that's my son on the right helping out. And then on the left, well, on your right, I guess, is another volunteer with the smaller E pointing downwards for those that you can't see. And so it... So everybody can put their glasses on now. So they then leave that station with a visual acuity of 2200 or 2100 or finger motion only. After that, they do near vision. A lot of people just come because they need some glasses to help them with some near vision tasks. Here's another one of my sons in Indonesia working with somebody to provide near vision. After the near and far vision check, things are documented, and then they head to the next station, which is screening. Screening uses typically a family doctor, an optometrist, and an ophthalmologist, and you have an ophthalmoscope and a pen light. What you're doing is you're looking at the individual, their visual acuity, and you're trying to set them into the three different categories. Do they have a refractive problem? Do they just need glasses, whether it be for distance or reading or bifocals? Do they have a medical eye disease that needs some further attention? Or do they have a surgical eye disease that we can help during the mission with cataract or strabismus repair or pterygiums or things like that? This is my wife in Bolivia looking at a patient using the pen light for something called the afferent pupil defect. This is a very important finding, especially in the context of a pre-op cataract assessment. And what happens is you're swinging that light back and forth to see if the pupil starts to constrict or dilate. If they have an afferent pupil defect, then the optic nerve behind that cataract is dead. And so if you remove the cataract, they won't see. And it's obviously something that we do not want to have on a mission trip. We want to be able to remove that cataract so it restores vision. So this is one of the most important things of screening patients when they have a cataract. Then, of course, there's documentation of the salient findings from the screening station before they then go to the next group of stations. Here's an example of a gentleman, a 79-year-old Colombian farmer who has a mature cataract on his eye on your right. He is on what I would call the Freedom 79 package. And the reason why I say that is when he put down on the registration what he did, he said he was desempleados, which was unemployed at 79. And his goal was to have the cataract removed so he could go out and work. So this gentleman has got, so he was able to have cataract surgery to restore his vision. When we first went to Burma, he wouldn't have met the criteria to have his cataract operated on because he was only blind in one eye. In Burma, you had to be blind in both eyes, because the disease was just so incredible. And so often doing surgery on those individuals freed them up and freed up one of their family members who was often a caregiver for these individuals. So for a family doctor to come out and see these things is just an amazing experience, and certainly it's a great CME on eyes. Here's a gentleman in Burma that unfortunately has a problem that we cannot help. So we'll see all sorts of things during the screening process of eye damage, or often there'll be trauma that they'll have. They'll get an infection. The infection festers, and then they lose total vision of the eye. Once they've gone through the screening process, then they move on to, if they just need refraction and refractive problems, then they go on to the next station, autorefraction. This is when the teenagers love it, because they get to use these little gadgets, the automatic refractor, which has got a joystick on it. And here's my son at 13 using it on a patient. What it does is they center in the visual access, and it is able to give them a printout of their prescription, their rough prescription. Then they take that little piece of paper with them, and they go to the glasses station. And as you remember from perhaps the earlier slide, here's the same badminton court, now with a bunch of duct tape and everybody organized. And this is a typical day that you'd see in full swing at the variety of different stations. They'll bring the glasses then to the major station. The glasses are all brought by us. They're mainly donated glasses that have been cleaned up. They're all cataloged, and they're put on a database on the computer. Then the prescription is given to the person at the computer. The computer does a search, and it comes up with a close match. And often they'll have three or four different potential matches that may work. Then what we do is we put them on their face, and we say, does this help? Does this help? And we try to get the best possible match. And, you know, sometimes we try to make sure that the women's glasses go on the women and not the men, but sometimes that doesn't necessarily happen. Sometimes people will bring in they have glasses, and so they'll bring them in, and an easy way of just finding out what their prescription is using this machine, and this is my daughter, using the machine to give what the prescription would be for the patient. Once the glasses are reasonable for the patient, then what we do is we adjust the glasses, and often we'll have an optometrist with a bunch of different tools, and we'll be able to adjust the glasses. Sometimes we have trouble finding the right type of glasses for people, and especially for a high myope. To borrow a phrase from Plato, necessity is the father of invention. As my father was able to fashion some glasses for this individual, I think he had his eureka moment, not in the bathtub as Archimedes, but while drinking his morning coffee in Burma, because the coffee was in a little packet that you poured into the cup, and then you added water, and it was called 3-in-1, because it had coffee, creamer, and sugar. And so I think he thought, hey, I can do a 3-in-1 glasses. And so he was able to fashion this with some twine and electrician's tape, and this gentleman was very pleased. He was able to go out and continue driving the bus in Burma, so now the roads are all safe. This is a picture of the local ophthalmologist, Dr. Matthias Flens, who's the friend of ours that got us involved in the whole process. And here he's doing medical screening for potential strabismus surgery on a little boy. Here's one of the medical stations where we have all the medicines that are brought in for glaucoma or infections or things like that. So they'll come and provide some drops to see if we can help with any medical problem there. We bring slit lamps. So these are part of all the equipment that comes for surgical assessment. Then once it's determined that they need surgery, they go through this process, and this is an A scanner, which looks at the length of the eye, so that when a lens goes in, then it's a good focal distance to provide surgery for them. Now, the type of surgery that we do in developing worlds really depends on the equipment. Sometimes we're able to get into a new hospital. Sometimes we just use an older facility. And so there tends to be done an older procedure called the extra cap procedure for removal of the cataract. And this involves cutting the cornea, extracting the the little M&M jelly bean cataract lens, and then putting another lens in and suturing it up. So they need quite good anesthesia for this. So this is a retrobulbar block that's done on patients as a pre-op for the surgery. After that, they get these little pinkies, which are little foam balls that go over their eye, and they lie down and rest. This reduces the pressure of the eye, because if the surgeon operates and removes the cataract, if the pressure of the eye is still high, then the iris starts to extrude from the incision site, and it's very difficult for them to push that back in and try to get the lens in. Here's a picture of me with my son. One of the jobs I had was a scrub nurse this particular time, and this is in Burma. So you can see the operating microscope and pictures of what they're doing with the eye. Then on day one post-op, they come back to the clinic. They have their bandages on. Here's my sister-in-law and brother-in-law that are helping organize the patients to have their bandages removed. And then their bandages are removed. Often there's a big smile that goes across the face. Then they all want the cool aviator glasses. So they're given some sunglasses both for light sensitivity, and in the developing world, obviously, you're looking at trying to avoid any trauma to the eye. And here we are at the end of the journey with a picture of the team of both local and foreign volunteers who have worked together for the last couple of weeks on a common goal of improving eye care while making new friends. So I hope you enjoyed the journey, and certainly would be happy to entertain questions a little bit later on during the question period. Thank you very much.